I'm looking at the video for the Arcade 1-Up stuff, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I saw that. So I actually had a chance to talk with those guys when I was at Evo this year.
The Asteroids. Here's the thing. Asteroids. It comes with Asteroids and Lunar Lander and Tempest and another game, something Havoc. And we need more vector graphic games. Someone should create the Vectrex 2.
Not only does it come with those games, but like they really kind of went out of their way. Like, authenticity was their main goal. They actually brought in software designers and hardware designers from the companies to, like, judge what they were putting together. What? No, to judge what they were putting together to make sure that they were making something that actually fit the bill for, like, the original gameplay.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, it's like the arcade cabinets, except they're 3/4 the size. So you either sit down at it or it comes with a little box that you put underneath out so that you can do it standing up, too. And I know a lot of people who would be drooling over the Street Fighter cabinet, which comes with Street Fighter 2 cabinet, Champion Edition, Turbo, and the new Challengers.
So one of the interesting things they told me about building authenticity with the gameplay is that there's apparently a thing with Street Fighter where when like Ryu or Ken or Akuma fire a fireball, it kind of lags up the match a little bit. And they originally patched that out, but one of the game designers told him, no, if you want authenticity, you got to keep that in. It's one of the things that people expect when they get the feel of the game. It's just like that little bit of slowness that comes out of when Ray does a Hadouken. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing they're going for. And like, it's also like on the Tempest thing, it's got the scroll wheel, which is nice and tight.
Well, here's the thing. One of them is a trackball one, and that's the one I'm most interested in if I was to get one. It has Centipedes, Millipede, Missile Command, and Crystal Castles.
Yes. So
Crystal Castles they always went underrated. I mean, little bear all over the place.
And I played a lot, and I played all of these when I was out at Evo, and every one of them feels nice and tight, and the gameplay is really good. If you're a collector of arcade machines, or if you just want to have those around, like as an item, they're really, really, really good quality.
Yeah. Also, Rampage Gauntlet, Joust, and Defender.
That one I've heard some complaint about, but just because it's a 3-stick arcade. Which is a shame for
Gauntlet. Well, you have to if it's Rampage.
Yeah, I know, but people have been upset that there's no 4-stick thing for Gauntlet.
Gauntlet, yeah. well, guess what? You won't have I don't know what color. You'll have one color left out.
Mm-hmm.
Blue Wizard is starving.
That aside, they've done a great job putting those things together.
Yeah, I mean, again, my choice would be the trackball one with Centipede, Millipede, Missile Command, and Crystal Castles. And it makes me wish they would also include Food Fight in there. Because Food Fight is really underrated.
It's also weird. I've seen that game in action. Yeah. I had to do a story on
the character's name is Charlie Chuck, and he wants to eat his ice cream. When he eats his ice cream, he opens his head like an amoeba and just swallows it. I actually wrote the review for it for Classic Gaming, which was used to be Classic Gaming Planet or something like that. I wrote reviews for that and Ladybug. You know, actually, you know, I would love to see one cabinet for all the Universal games like Mr. Do and Ladybug. Actually, you could just do one cabinet all about Mr. Do. They had so many Mr. Do's. Mr. Do's Unicorns, Mr. Do, the one that's at the amusement park. You know, the Mr. Do Unicorns is basically a ripoff of Space Panic. Did you ever play Space Panic?
No, I haven't played that one.
That's the one in which these monsters are tracking you over these floors, and the only way to kill them is to dig a hole in the floor and have them fall into it, then bap their head down to the next level. You probably have seen it. You just don't know the name. Anyways. Oh, by the way, here's the thing about arcade sticks. Now, I showed him a picture of the Hori type of stick that's being made by Arc System Works, and another one, Quenang, however you pronounce that name.
Kamba.
Kamba, yeah. And that'll come to the United States, don't worry. It's only the PS3, PS4 bundle that's going to be Japan only, you know it.
I don't know, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. It really depends on the demand, really.
Yeah, but there's no such thing as NTSC or PAL when it comes to controllers.
No, I know, but it's a matter of, like, manufacturing and sending it overseas. Some people don't want to pay for that.
Did you see the $200 Power Armor link I sent you?
I did.
And by the way, people are playing tonight. It's starting a day early.
Yep. Much to their chagrin, they...
Yeah, I have a friend who's playing solo all by themselves, and they're enjoying it that way. They prefer it that way.
I prefer playing this game solo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this one in particular, because it's very desolate. There's, like, no NPCs, like, occasional robots. So you really feel like you're in a true wasteland where everyone is dead.
But here's a question. Can you set off a nuke?
Probably. I don't know.
I think you have to actually do a quest in order to have to do a series of quests to set off a nuke. I think you have to go into the bunker. You have to do some puzzles and... But yeah, I mean, I'm staying far, far away from that right now. I'm just going to wait until like 2 months to see what people are saying about the game.
Anyway, I just realized we haven't even done the title card.
I know. this has all been preamble.
Well, it's a good conversation. I assume we'll use it.
Anyway, the VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 520, recorded on November 13th, 2018.
The 20th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 353rd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Fowler.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Now, we did record a 520 and it was fine. It was just dull. And I wasn't going to waste people's time with just the two of us and talking about incredibly dull topics, especially since the big news came around the weekend. So, TJ... I know what I've been playing, and I think I know what you've been playing. So actually, Scott, what have you been playing?
I'm still playing Dragon's Quest.
Well, what do you got left to do in there? I thought you were in the new game, or no, the post credits.
I am in the post credits, and the bosses are tougher, so it takes a little. I'm just having trouble with this Ouroboros dragon thing. I'm trying to do all the side stuff before going after the final boss, but maybe I'll just go after the final boss and be done with it, because I think that's pretty much where I'm at now.
I've completed Red Dead Redemption 2.
100%?
Yep. Well, no, nice. I've completed all the stories. I haven't 100%ed it. Completing all the stories has got me to 83%. So basically, I'm just doing wrapping up. But here's the thing. Now, at least the very, very, very ending is a very happy ending, except for the fact you remember, oh, right, Red Dead Redemption happens next. Then it's not so happy. It's sort of like, yeah, they're fine for now until John has to go and get himself shot up in a bar. or John's wife and son turn into zombies, and then he becomes a zombie himself, depending on which game you play. So yeah, at least at the end of Red Dead Redemption 2, everything's fine and happy and all that stuff. So yeah, except for the fact during the end credits, actually the end credits shows all the stuff that happens to the characters, all the characters from the game, basically, who weren't killed. Like one character is married and has a kid and is walking around Saint Denis, and it's really nice to see. But some shot, the very final scene has Agent Ross spying on Beecher Cove, and it's like, yep, okay, yeah, you had to show us that because we all know that all the happiness John's going to have isn't going to last very long.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Well, there's nothing you can do about it. This is the problem being a prequel. I mean, near the end of the of this game, of the main story, it's like, oh no, where's John? Is he dead? And I'm thinking, no. John's going to be okay. Jack's going to be okay. Abigail's going to be okay because they have to be around for the sequel and happy. I mean, for the prequel and happy. They nothing bad can happen to them. You know, just like you know that nothing bad is going to happen to Uncle because he's in the next game too. Nothing bad can happen to Sadie because you meet her in the previous game. Nothing bad is going to happen to Pearson because you meet him in the previous game. You know, so it's like that's one of the problems of doing a prequel is that unless you use entirely new characters, you don't have to worry about the ones that you already know.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there was some weird thing in which one of them gets killed and then gets replaced by a double. That's not going to happen in Red Dead Redemption. I will say, you know, there are some Easter eggs, though, that I read about. Like, it's possible for you to go to a certain part of the map and at a certain time of night and see a UFO.
Yeah. That's fun.
Little Easter eggs. I mean, I haven't done the vampire thing yet, even though I got the clue for it. Because there's vampires in the game, too. There's a little side mission. Almost another Easter egg. So.
Interesting.
Here's the unusual thing, though. After you finish the main story and you do the epilogue, the map increases a friggin' bunch. The entire map from the first game becomes available, except for Mexico. So you can go to places like Tumbleweed and, you know, and all the other places that were close to the border. I mean, you can see where it stops because there's mountains in your way. But, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I haven't even explored the entire map yet. And that's how big it is in the epilogue, when it opens up everything. Which I guess it has to be big if you're going to do a multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
So, how far have you gotten, by the way, TJ?
Not really far at all. I've been trying to play through a few other things that I had on hand, and I just, you know, I haven't had the chance to just sit down and do it because I've also been traveling.
Yeah. I estimate that here's the epilogue map adds doubles the size of the entire map. Just doubles it. So they locked away 50% of the game until you finish the main portion. Then you have to do three chapters afterwards, which is basically half the size of the main. So it's sort of like you're saying, Jesus, this is a very long epilogue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of like, you know, you thought Arthur Morgan was going to be the main character. No, you have two main characters now.
Hmm.
But I will say, you know, it does lead in nicely into Red Dead Redemption. It's just unfortunate that we know what we know about Red Dead Redemption. At least the main plot of the first game, I mean, of Red Dead Redemption 2 doesn't have Arthur Morgan coming out of a barn and getting shot up. I think people would have thrown their discs out onto the street if they did that.
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't had a chance to get far in the game. I probably am going to take my holiday break to just like plow through it. I'm hoping to get a lot of time with it, but for right now, I'm trying to finish up a few things. Mm-hmm. I'm going through another playthrough of Deltarune with Samantha so she can see it, because we played through Undertale together and she really enjoyed it. So we're having a good time with that.
You played the genocide route, right?
Nah, I played this route. I can't.
Themselves to do that. If you bring yourself to do the genocide route in Undertale, then there's something wrong with you.
There are plenty of people that can. There are YouTube videos to prove it.
Yeah, they did it because they wanted to show what it was like, so no one else would have to do it.
But no, we're having a good time with it. It's fun going through it a second time. It makes me, as much as it sets up for obviously something that's going to happen in the future.
They're already teasing, and they were saying, I think we talked about this last week. You know, they were teasing the sequel, sort of sequel, kind of sequel. And yes. And one of the main character, well, not the main character, but one of the, I don't want to say the big bad, but the person who's orchestrating the entirety of Undertale, they were speculating if they were ever going to figure out who that was. And the developer said, nope.
Yeah, there's some Easter eggs that, like, I mean, there's so many different Easter eggs, and some of them the guy Toby Fox, he's made it clear that he's just like, why solve a mystery?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, Voltaire said the secret to being boring is to tell everything.
Mm-hmm. But but we're having a good time with it nonetheless. The characters are great, the music is great, the story is it's very meta, and will probably turn people off that don't like that. But at the same time, it's got enough heart and soul in it and determination that it's still fun. It's still fun as far as just like an RPG and a story go. Other than that, I also in my spare time picked up Resonance of Fate 4K HD edition for PS4. Which is I've mentioned it before. It's the JRPG from the Xbox 360 era. It's a gun ballet RPG.
Yeah.
Where you basically it's a turn based tactics RPG where you all start at a certain place on the field and you work your way through. But like the way it works is that like. You set a movement path, and then on your way to that movement path, you attack. And, like, basically you try to set up certain trajectories where you're firing at weak points of enemies. And it's really complicated, but at the same time, it's also pretty interesting and fun. Like, it was probably one of the most outlandish battle designs I'd seen out of that era. Which is saying a lot, because the Xbox 360 era of JRPGs had a lot of crazy things going on.
Yeah, especially one of the best commercials for an RPG, and that was Lost Odyssey using White Rabbit by Jefferson mm-hmm. Starship.
Yeah, and I will say this: one of the characters is voiced by the same guy who does Robin in Teen Titans, like the animated Teen Titans.
Yeah,
and it's really. Really weird hearing his voice outside of the context of Robin, just because he's been that character.
He also does the voice for Teen Titans Go as well. So,
He's
been that character. All the voices from Teen Titans 2003 to Teen Titans Go.
He's been that character for so long that it's jarring to see him in another place. But it's all pretty good. Like it's an interesting little thing. I'm curious I haven't gotten far enough to see if they fixed the issues, which was like, I know, a straight up oppressive encounter rate in that game. But I'm hoping that they knock down that rate just a little bit to make it a bit more fun as opposed to like grindy.
Okay. So before we go on, I'm going to say I did play State of Decay 2. And I played it for a day, and I was really enjoying it, and then it kept freezing on me, and freezing on me, and freezing on me. And I did download the damn patch. So, let me know when it's actually fully fixed.
That's a shame, because that game had so much going for it, and it's a buggy mess.
Oh, you know, I was really getting into it. I mean, I was... it's not the tutorial, it's more like, they're still holding your hand a little bit, you know, and I was really enjoying myself. But, you know, like I said, either State of Decay 3, now that Microsoft owns the damn studio, Undead Labs, maybe they're going to force them to, you know, say, okay, now we own you, so you better do this right. this is not like us in BioWare where we're doing the... No, now we own you.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're going to move straight on to the news. We don't have a gaming flashback this week. I wanted to do Dark Age of Camelot, but we're going to do it another time. And the first news item has to do with XO18. So we might as well talk about XO18 first. And one thing that I saw that really shocked me is that of all the games they're doing backwards compatibility for, and Scott will chuckle at this, they actually turned Civilization Revolution, Xbox... backwards compatible, and gave it an Xbox One X Enhanced Edition.
Wow, that is a chuckle. I didn't think that game had done that well to be done backwards compatible, because I know that they don't do
well,
all
they
the
don't
games.
Own it,
they...
But you know, the fact that they went ahead and gave it 4K and updated the graphics for it, you know, it's just. And I still own it too, so I'm going to pop it in at some point and try it out.
Yeah,
they also just... did all the Final Fantasy 13's backwards compatibility too, but I don't really care.
I mean, okay, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Like, kind of sounds like they're just taking scraping the bottom of the barrel on those ones.
Well, here's the thing. It seems to me that Microsoft is looking at PC properties or PC-style properties and saying, you know what? I think we should invest in this. And it's going to lead into the first news item, but we're not going to get there yet. We're going to continue to talk about XO18, which was in Mexico City, by the way. They also announced keyboard and mouse support, which is something that's going to be very, very huge for Fortnite.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
And also PUBG. Now,
well,
I have to say, one of the things is that PUBG has been officially announced today coming to PS4. But Microsoft said, yeah, well, it's going to be free on Xbox Game Pass.
Hmm.
And here's the thing. I think they're getting out at the right time. The timing is perfect because PUBG is on its downward. And, you know, Fortnite is not only dominating, but there's other games coming out. And people are starting to care less about PUBG.
That's good.
Wow.
I just don't care. It looks boring after a while, you know? I've watched
people
a video
like
of it.
What are you talking
and
about?
You just run around a map, shoot at people, and then rinse and repeat.
Yeah,
it
I mean,
just,
but...
it's, there's no substance.
So here's the
not
other
for
thing.
Me, anyways.
This almost got by the thing. Not only is Warface coming to Xbox One X as a as with keyboard, mouse and keyboard support, but so is DayZ, which is shocking. Vermintide 2 is already, but you know, all these games are getting keyboard and mouse and keyboard support, and it's sort of like PlayStation people are saying, well, what took you so long? But the one thing I would be amazed to see is if they bring World of Warcraft to Xbox One X. And I'm going to tell you, it's not such a funny idea since we all know, and we discussed this last week in the episode that's not going to be published, Blizzard is coming out with World of Warcraft Classic. And that's the World of Warcraft I grew up on, quote unquote grew up on, you know, with you know, micromanaging your perks and all that stuff before they streamlined everything. And everything is not handheld. There's no hand holding whatsoever. They're not going to tell you where to go, what to do, or anything like that. No, here's the quest. This is what you have to do, and then you can come back, and then we may tell you where to go next, but we may not.
Huh. Yeah, I talked about it a lot on the Ghost episode. It really is sort of a bygone era of games where, like, there were so many things that were difficult, ridiculously difficult, and
difficult. Hey, Scott, remember the era of thick manuals when you used to buy Civilization? It would be a book in there.
Yeah. I miss my Civilization 2 manual. That thing was like
at least
half an inch thick.
I still have it. But the thing is, new games don't come with it. That's the disappointing thing.
That is sad. I mean, I liked reading the manual. I liked looking through the art and the instructions. Sometimes you got lore depending on the game that you're playing.
When you played something like Sid Meier's Pirates, you got a history lesson about the Caribbean in the 17th century, and they talked about what this did and that did and, you know, all that stuff. And, oh, by the way, here are some of the instructions.
Yeah. It was just, you know, it was a fun thing to have. You know, you had this physical box, and sometimes the box was very nice, and you'd have the manual, and sometimes you have the copyright protection thing, whatever it is, you know, again, depending on the game.
Yeah.
And they got creative with those. But, you know, like, I remember when I got the Ultimate Special Edition, and there was, like, leather-bound magic books that
Oh, I remember, you know, picking up Ultima 3 and Ultima 4. They were just the regular editions, but they came with cloth maps and coins and spell books and all the little doodads that came with it.
I just remember going through and spending so much time on Warcraft 2 Tides of Darkness, just reading the lore of the book and looking at the art that was in there, because they had a ton of art. They had a ton of art in those guides. And not guides, but like the manual that came with the game. And
So I have to ask you a question before we move on to the next game news. Did you see Void Bastards?
I have heard of it. I haven't had a chance to sit down and look at it.
Wow, okay, it's interesting. It's sort of like System Shock 2, except with cel-shaded graphics, and it's a strategy game. It's a first-person shooter slash strategy game. You have to look at the trailer, you'll go, whoa, this is interesting. And it's also going to be on the Xbox Game Pass, too, so... I mean, Microsoft, you know, they kept on splooging about Battlefield 5 and Devil May Cry 5. Or was it Battlefield V? Oh, well, anyways. And Just Cause 4 and Kingdom Hearts 3. You know, it's sort of like they're just, you know, pounding it into, yeah, we're about the games, too. So, but we're going to talk about the biggest news of the weekend, and maybe... I don't know about the entire year, but perhaps the second half of the year. And the first news item is Obsidian and In Exile joined Microsoft Studios. And this comes to us from Microsoft itself. I went directly to the official press release. As part of our commitment to bringing a steady stream of new exclusive games to our fans, Microsoft is excited to announce its intent to acquire two new game development studios, Obsidian Entertainment and In Exile Entertainment. Obsidian was founded in 2003 in Irvine by industry veterans from Black Isle Studios, led by Fergus Urquhart. The studio quickly made a name for itself with the Xbox exclusive Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords. Over the last 15 years, they have delivered genre-defining RPGs to players on both console and PC, including Fallout New Vegas, South Park, The Stick of Truth, and Pillars of Eternity. In Exile Entertainment is a team of industry veterans with decades of PC and RPG experience. Led by Interplay founder Brian Fargo, In Exile's two development teams in Newport Beach, California, and New Orleans excel at creating vast worlds for players to explore with such titles as Wasteland 2, Torment Tides of Numenera, Bard's Tale 4, and the upcoming Wasteland 3. And as well, I think they also did... Tyranny? They did Tyranny too, didn't they?
Yes.
Nope. No, that was
Obsidian?
That was Obsidian.
Oh, okay.
Right.
It was important for us to find studio partners who have strong creative visions, a mastery of their medium, and are expert world builders. Obsidian and In Exile embody all of these qualities, and this is the important part, while also bringing expertise on the PC platform and unique RPG focus to the table. And here's the other important part. While they do share a common knowledge, that is, they're both basically people from Black Isle. The two creative teams at Obsidian and In Exile are very different. They will continue to operate autonomously with their unique talents, IP, and experience. As part of Microsoft Studios, damn it, I'm screwing all this up. While they do have a common heritage, the two creative teams at Obsidian and In Exile are very different. They will continue to operate autonomously with their unique talents, IP, and expertise. As part of Microsoft Studios, Obsidian and In Exile will have the support and freedom to fully realize their creative ambitions on both existing franchises and new RPG projects. Now, there's more to this. When interviewed, they said that what they meant was that they're going to have their own management, right? They're going to continue to do their own management, which tells me they're basically doing the Minecraft thing of saying, okay, you do what you do. You know, they also are very interested in that they divided them from AAA development, which means you're not going to see a game like Fallout New Vegas from Obsidian unless they want to do it. You know,
I'm not sure. Wouldn't they have? See, that I thought would not.
No,
be
I mean, well, let's put
all,
it this way: they wouldn't make a game that's like that. Fallout, but, you know, just a first-person RPG, unless they wanted to. Now, here's the other thing, is that actually there was supposed to be a launch game developed by Obsidian for the launch of the Xbox One X, Stormlands. And I'm wondering, well, they're not going to do that, because why chew your spinach twice, right? But it seems to me like Obsidian wasn't that upset with having the game canceled, and this has been in development for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
For Obsidian, that is. I don't know how long they've been talking in Exile.
Yeah, Exile was a bit of a surprise.
Remember,
to me.
A month ago, mm-hmm. Brian Fargo was talking about wanting to buy back Interplay.
Yeah, that's why I was saying this was a surprise to me, because it seemed like Brian Fargo had his own plans separate of Microsoft, and this just kind of like, I don't know if it was something that was going on behind the scenes or something that just came up out of the blue. It seems like something that just came up out of the blue based upon the previous news we were talking about with InXile.
It does make sense, though, because I remember when they were going to produce Pillars 2, they were contemplating if they wanted to crowdfund or not, and that they felt that they needed resources. And
well, that's the other thing. These two companies have been crowdfunding a lot, and that's basically walking on a tightrope.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were
yeah, and I think they wanted to get away from that.
Dissolved.
That's why I think it was kind of out of the blue. I think it must have happened pretty quickly for Microsoft and InXile, because, I mean, one of the things about Bard's Tale 4 was that Brian Fargo was saying if it made enough money, he was going to buy Interplay back.
Well, here's the other thing, though. Microsoft does have a relationship with Microsoft, because they were the ones who were eager to have Wasteland 2 come to console. And one of the things that Brian showed off at E3 to me was Wasteland 2 on the Xbox One. So it's they had a relationship, you know, and who knows, maybe Microsoft said, hey, guess what? Your buddies at Obsidian are joining us. Why don't you do it too? Here's
the
thing.
I
would love to hear Microsoft bribe Brian Fargo by saying, you know, this Baldur's Gate license, you want to do Baldur's Gate 3?
I wonder if one of Brian Fargo's stipulations for InXile coming to Xbox is that we'll give you a successful game to prove our worth, and then you have to buy Interplay for us.
I know a lot of people who are just salivating of the idea that maybe Baldur's Gate 3 could be done by Brian Fargo. Just pay out the money here. Here's the money. Now go make us Baldur's Gate 3. But the other thing is that Microsoft is realizing, well, a lot of other people, they're not the only ones, you know, but a lot of people are realizing how big an audience the PC crowd really is. And Microsoft is saying, you know, we need to strengthen Windows, and we might as well get more stuff that's on PC.
It's not just PC games, but it's RPGs in particular, and isometric ones.
Well, that's the other thing. They noticed they also stressed the fact that they said decades of PC and RPG expertise.
Mm-hmm. They obviously want more RPG games, so that's what Obsidian and InXile will do.
And it's not, you know, it's not for nothing. You know, it's going to help the Windows 10 store, although they will be releasing on Steam unless there's DLC, of course, because what happens is that if you have DLC, you don't want to release on Steam until you have the Ultimate Edition and don't have to pay Valve for all the DLC that you release.
Yeah. I don't know if they'll be on Steam or not, because, I mean, Pillars of Eternity 2 and 1 are on Steam, and
well,
not all.
All the crowdfunded stuff that's currently
DLC
out, like Wasteland
has come out
3,
for Pillars 2.
Are coming off the platforms they promised.
Right.
But
just...
here's the thing, you know, in X018, they were bragging about how Minecraft has now ballooned to 94 million concurrent players.
Yeah, that's
and one
crazy.
Of the things is that
and now there's
you know,
a Minecraft Dungeons coming out.
Yeah. They announced that as well, but I'm just saying, you know, Microsoft is making gobs of money from the PC version of Minecraft alone, you know? And Microsoft also knows, you know, we're not going to... There's a Switch version of Minecraft, there's a PS3 and PS4 version of Minecraft, we're not going to... There's a mobile version of Minecraft, we're not going to... You know, we're not going to say no to more money.
Mm-hmm.
So...
That's true.
The way they've been, you know, let's put it this way, you know, the way Mojang has thrived under Microsoft, the way Turn 10 has thrived under Microsoft, it seems like now that Don Matrick is out and you have Phil Spencer taking his place, people are doing things the right way in terms of, you know, doing development. So, you know, I mean, here's the other thing about RPGs. You know, Halo may have been the system seller at launch for the Xbox 360. The Xbox 360 was just, eh. Oh, no, I mean the Xbox, I'm sorry. The original Xbox was basically a curiosity. It was a Halo machine. what made the Xbox a great system? Knights of the Old Republic. And then all of a sudden it became an RPG machine, too.
Jade Empire
was RPGs
were
coming
cool
out
too.
On the Xbox.
On the Xbox, Jade Empire. That was good.
You had Fable. You had... Well, you had all the Bioware stuff. You also had Portable. You had a lot of RPGs. And then, you know, it's like... They had to prove, yeah, we're not just a shooter box. And one of the ways you do it is an RPG. Now, that said, I wouldn't mind seeing Obsidian working on another Fallout New Vegas-type game.
I don't think it'll be Fallout, but it might be...
No, it's not going to be Fallout, because Bethesda owns that, and there's no way in hell they're going to give up
right,
that license.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just saying, a Fallout New Vegas-type game. The only thing is that Chris Avellone is not there, and he was always the driving force. I mean, he was really made sure that all your actions had consequences. I mean, you still had that. I mean, you said that in, what was it, Pillars of Eternity 2? Which was the game that really had the consequences having reactions, Scott, that you were playing?
Was that was Pillars 2? 2, yeah. It was.
Yeah.
I was talking about how the characters remember the things that you've said and done. You get a reputation, and certain things are unlocked due to whatever reputation you've had with certain factions, with the characters, with even just being like an honest person or a deceptive person. So there were a lot of consequences, and it made for a different journey depending on what routes you took, what decisions you made. Like I said, not all of DLC has come out yet, so once that last DLC comes out, which is supposed to be this month, I'll probably do a replay of it, playing all of the DLC as well, so it might be a different experience.
Yeah. Like I said, you know... Go ahead.
I'm just wondering what kind of games we're going to get, because I know Josh Sawyer said in an interview that he was...
That's the exciting part, just seeing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We don't know. That's the exciting part, when you don't know what's going to happen. TJ, last word?
Yeah.
No, I mean...
Pillars 3 could be all sorts of stuff.
I think we were all a little nervous that, like, if Microsoft took over Obsidian or In Exile, that they might, like, take the reins in a different direction.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they're letting them be very free with their own creations, which is great.
They do with Mojang. I mean, they said they told Mojang to do whatever you want, and now they have 94 million... what's called users, and it's a money making machine. That Minecraft has is licensed to print its own money now.
Yeah.
By the way, I saw Telltale's Minecraft Tales stories for $10 with all episodes 1 to 8. So I'm thinking about maybe picking that up.
Okay.
Interesting.
That was a fun game.
Yeah. Well, you're the one playing it, and you're telling us what happened.
Yeah. I did. I enjoyed it, and I hope you enjoy it. It's
well, here's the thing. You weren't quite enjoying it, like, the first two episodes, and then it started to pick up because I think Telltale was listening to fan complaints.
Yeah. And they did a little bit more detail with the building. It's still not quite the level that Dragon's Quest Builders is, and especially with the second game that they're going to come out. It looks like they're going to do, like I said, building puzzles. I don't know if they're going to do any more Minecraft story mode, Telltale style.
No one was expecting episodes 6 through 8 either. So,
yeah.
Like, it's a Telltale game. It's only supposed to be 5 chapters. Oh, guess what? Here's 6 through 8.
Yeah.
Anyway, Scott, go ahead and take the next item.
All right. Let's see. Okay, yeah, this was sad. Stanley dies at 95 from Hollywood Reporter. Stan Lee, the legendary writer, editor, and publisher of Marvel Comics, whose fantabulous but flawed creations made him a real-life superhero to comic book lovers everywhere, has died. He was 95. Lee, who began the business in 1939 and created Black Panther, Spider-Man, the X-Men, Mighty Thor, Iron Man, Fantastic Four, The Incredible Hulk, Daredevil, and Ant-Man, among countless, died early Monday morning at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles, a family representative told The Hollywood Reporter. On his own and through his work with frequent artist-writer collaborators, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko.
Others. Come on.
Lee catapulted Marvel from a tiny venture into world's number one publisher of comic books and later a multimedia giant. In 2009, Walt Disney Company bought Marvel Entertainment for $4 billion and most of the top-grossing superhero films of all time, led by The Avengers Infinity War, $2.05 billion worldwide, to take earlier this year, having featured Marvel. So yeah, that was he did lead an amazing life.
You have to put an asterisk on that $2.05 billion because if you adjust for adjustment, Gone with the Wind still blows everything else out of the water. But it's interesting because we did an item on Steve Ditko dying earlier this year. So the two creators of Spider-Man passed away. And Jack Kirby passed away a long time. He passed away in 94.
Yeah. For lack of better words, I'm not sad that Stan Lee
died in old age.
Well, I mean, yeah,
I left out the sordid business of the past 10 years with the elder abuse and all that stuff. I didn't include that because it's just not relevant at this point.
Yeah. But he was definitely not gone too early at this point. The dude was a genius, and he created he single-handedly created both. Well, he created an empire, and it's an empire that will far withstand the test of time and far withstand his own life and the lives of many of us.
I wonder if Mr. Perlmutter understands that when he dies, no one's going to mourn his life at all.
Who is that?
Oh, God. Just the creep who bought Marvel Comics and basically tried to jip Stan Lee out of everything. And when one of his things had a disaster and Stan Lee lost almost all of his money, he and his friends laughed about it in front of the other comic creators, by the way.
That's horrible.
Yeah, he's a very horrible person. The more you read about him, the more you just want to wish he would just take a long walk off a short pier. All you have to do is, if you go on YouTube, check out The Rise and Fall of the Comic Empire.
Mm. Well, forget that fuck. Stan Lee was a legend in so many different ways. And in fact, like, I've been talking with my colleagues about it a lot. He kind of created the celebrity cameo.
No, not even close. No.
Come on.
But he is going to have a few more cameos. I mean,
and who did?
He's going to have one in Ralph Wrecks the Internet. He's also going to be in the new Spider-Man animated film. He's supposed to be in Avengers 4 and maybe one or two other things.
Yeah.
He was so frail, though, it was almost impossible for him to do any more live action appearances. So most of the stuff that he quote unquote appeared in, like he did with Teen Titans Go to the Movies, is just as a voiceover role.
Mm-hmm. But still, it was kind of amazing to see just like one person had a huge hand in so many different things that are like now almost unignorable. Like you can't walk down a street without bumping into some sort of Marvel something.
Here's the thing. You can say the same thing about Jack Kirby, and you can say the same thing about Julius Schwartz. You can say the same thing about Kurt Swan, for crying out loud.
For sure.
But here's the thing, is that he had the personality to go with it. I mean, he
was
his own invention.
The difference between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby is that Stan Lee put himself in the public eye at nearly all times. He wasn't afraid to like be right at the forefront of it and step out from behind
Jack
the
Kirby
drawing table.
Jack Kirby chomped cigars and was ready to punch out Nazis.
Right, but he wasn't afraid to step out from behind the writing room and behind the drawing desk and just like get up there in front of everyone and say, "I've got a secret to share with you. Check this shit out."
And he was also goofy as hell. I mean, he did the Stan Lee does the DC Universe series of comics in which he did comics in which he did Superman, and what would it be like if he did the origin for Batman and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and all that stuff? There's a lot of goofy stuff. You know, he worked for a lot of people. I mean, Marvel only started in, I want to say 60, because Amazing Fantasy was not was by the company that was just preceding Marvel, and they didn't even call it Marvel Entertainment. I think they called it I forgot the name of it. But anyways, I mean, Marvel came like in Marvel itself started in 1965 when it became actually when the comics started being called Marvel. So yeah, I mean. They still call what's it called? They renamed Los Angeles Comic Con for the past few years Stan Lee Comic Con.
That's cool. I mean, like, what can be said that hasn't already been said about the dude? He was incredible.
I almost forgot. You know, he was into everything though. You know, when I did New York Comic Con, I actually spoke to him because he was pimping his stuff on Shonen Jump.
Oh yeah.
He was shameless and just, you know, I wouldn't say he was whoring himself out, but he was spreading himself out all over the place. And I think part of it was because he really needed the money, but also because I just think he just wanted to do everything.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
So anyways, we're going to move to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Destiny 2 director assures players Bungie is not disappointed from Forsaken, from GamesRadar. During an earnings call last week, Activision COO Coddy Johnson said that despite Destiny 2's dramatically improved condition and reputation, the Destiny franchise is not performing as well as the company would like. "We have not yet seen the full core re-engage in Destiny," Johnson said, "which has led to the underperformance against expectations to date. Some players are in wait-and-see mode. If you're in, you're deeply engaged. If not, we think it's time to bring players back." As Variety reports, Johnson also said, we're working to accelerate the pace of live operations, innovation, and improve the speed at which we release new content to keep our players engaged and to provide new opportunities for monetization. Destiny 2 director Luke Smith touched on fan concerns on Twitter earlier today. "We are not disappointed with Forsaken," he said. "We set out to build a game that Destiny players would love, and at Bungie, we love it too. Building Destiny for players who love it is and will remain our focus going forward." Bungie and Activision have made several concerted pushes to bring players into, and more pertinently back to, Destiny 2 in the past weeks. Last month, the game's old DLCs were bundled together with Forsaken in order to streamline the new player experience and lower the barrier to entry. Likewise, Activision is literally giving Destiny 2 to players on PC through November 18th, and another free trial for Forsaken's exhilarating Gambit mode is running this weekend. Efforts like these may help bring back the wait-and-see players, Johnson mentioned, and they're healthy for Destiny 2's community as a whole. Whether giveaways or discounts, along with Destiny's three-part annual pass, which starts this winter, will do enough to appease Activision's bottom line remains to be seen, but the company is clearly aware of what players want from Destiny 2. So while Johnson's statements aren't exactly uplifting, they shouldn't be taken as a renouncement of Forsaken-style content.
You know, FPS MMOs are destined to die. But here's the thing, shooting things is not that exciting when you're doing an MMO. It may be in a multiplayer match, but not an MMO. I think the closest they've come to ever making it work was with Planetside, the first one, and only because it wasn't exactly an MMO. It was just battlefields across a huge, huge, range of planets.
Isn't Grand Theft Auto 5 online like this?
But here's the thing. That just has shooting missions, and it's not an MMO.
It also has heists and stuff to break things up.
I mean, it's more like, that's just an activity thing. It's like an open world cluster, you know, but when you have an MMO and the only thing you can do is shoot, there's nothing to work towards. Okay, you get a better number on your gun. Big whoop.
I mean, I would disagree that it's with the idea that it hasn't worked since Planetside. People liked the Taken King on the first Destiny. They didn't.
Now, here's the thing. Yeah, it's
no, they
it
did.
Reminds,
they
no, it, people got bored quickly of it.
They here's did the not. It reinvigorated the game.
No, it
I
didn't,
know because I
people
have
didn't
plenty
buy
of
Destiny 2. And Destiny 2 was it reminds me of Sonic fans and as you know, Yahtzee Croshaw would say, you know, oh look, Destiny's 2 again. I was right. Oh, it's okay. Oh, you know, it actually is not very good.
Yeah, I don't know what you were looking at, but Taken King reinvigorated Destiny for the length of that game.
People thought it did, and then after they played a while, I said, yeah, I'm done. What it needs is what PlanetSide had and what Dark Age of Camelot had, and that is it needs something that has a more emergent – it needs more emergent gameplay, you know? Because the 3-on-3-on-3 of PlanetSide and Dark Age of Camelot, the players would make their own stories. They didn't need to make content. You know?
Yeah, and like Destiny has always had a little bit of a thing where it does faction battles, but they're temporary and they don't last long.
No, what they need is they need one planet, a huge planet with different things, and base taking, you know, in which you have three factions go at it. And if one faction gets too large, you know what happens? The other two factions have a temporary alliance, says, we got to take these guys out.
Mm-hmm.
It just. You see, if you say we have to keep on creating content, that's not sustainable. It's impossible to sustain. You have to have a mode in which the players create their own story. That's how you create a long life for a game. You know, even single player RPGs like XCOM 2, they have emergent gameplay because you know things go wrong. That doesn't happen in something like Destiny. Look at Minecraft. All they do is we're going to add the occasional content, and people are just going to take that content and make their own stories.
Yeah, but to a certain, I mean, the way to get around that is that I guess to a certain extent is what they do already is that it's a little bit grindy and it necessitates joining up with other people, which is a turnoff to people that just want to play the game by themselves and do it their way, but. I mean, like, if you want to get the best
the
parts of it's always been a thing with Destiny.
What are you fighting for, though? You see, that's the problem.
You're fighting for awesome guns and cool clothes.
No, that's not sustainable. That, again, who cares? Because here's the
people
thing.
That are
one
playing,
thing
they care.
That Dark Age of Camelot did and that World of Warcraft did perfectly and all these other games is that they gave players a tribalism. It may not be good in the real world, but in a game in which it's you against the other people, you know, and it's like, I'm Alliance, or I'm Horde, you know, and fuck those other guys, we're going to fuck up their shit, then they have a reason to play, you know, and the reason why they want to get the better guns or weapons or anything like that is because it's the easier to fuck other people up with.
Mm-hmm.
You need
I'm not disagreeing that there shouldn't be.
And just adding content, you know, it's like, who cares?
The people that play the game care.
You're working to, and here's the thing, you know, World of Warcraft has an ending, and Blizzard knows that. That's why they rely so much on you know, Horde and Alliance PvP as the end game product. There is no end game product in Destiny.
There absolutely is. It's the raids.
They need more tribalism. They need two factions going at each other. And they need them to hate them, you know. It's them, you know. Look, they're the Albions and the Midgard. Let's kill them.
I'm bored of factions like that.
Old. But Scott, you're not playing that kind of game, so you don't have to worry about it. When you're playing Minecraft, you don't have to worry about it because the entire point of Minecraft is just creativity. Who's going to build the best building? You know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that you know, the competition in Minecraft is look, we made a working cell phone.
Yeah, or some other crazy invention.
The point of Minecraft is to go into other people's places and just have them show off, look what I did.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thrust of the game. You don't have that in Destiny. That's silly.
Well, and they have done the faction things at some points or another where they've done them as temporary events. And they give people a chance to compete against one another to see who can put up the best of whatever the mission is or whatever they're going for.
That's just saying, you're on this side, you're on this side, okay, go. Well, why are we fighting them? Because they're on the other side. You know how many people have to deal with who say, oh, you're Alliance? How could you be with Alliance?
Listen, I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm also just I'm not saying that you're entirely wrong. I am saying that there's something about it that doesn't work, because otherwise Destiny would do that faction thing a lot more than they do. For the most part, it's been like temporary events where they do this where you get to choose whatever faction you're going to be a part of.
Here's the thing. Like I said, actors are saying, Destiny's not doing what we wanted to do. We have to try and... You know, people are saying wait and see. There's a reason why they're waiting and seeing. They're waiting for it not to suck. They're waiting for the game that they want it to be, I mean, even in Halo, at least you have the red versus blue, and there's something about that.
Well, they're waiting for people to say that this is literally – and that's where I'm coming from with the Taken King, is that they're waiting for somebody to say this is the Taken King of Destiny 2.
So they already released that, quote-unquote, with this expansion –
Right, they were hoping for
Oh, yeah, it's improved Destiny 2. I mean, here's the thing. Oh, Destiny's kind of boring. Oh, yeah, the Taken King is great. It made Destiny... Oh, well, whatever. Oh, look, Destiny 2 took everything that was from the Taken King and incorporated it into the key game. Yeah, it's great. Oh, boring. Oh, Forsaken is going to be just like Taken King was. You notice that people get bored quickly because they're not given a reason to play.
Now, the people that I've seen that are actually in it greatly care about being there and actually enjoy doing it.
Well, every game has people who care about it.
But we're not talking about people that are in the game that are getting bored with it. We're talking about people that are sitting on the sideline, like, staring at it and being like, is it good enough?
It's good enough. Is it fun?
No, it's literally, is it good enough for me to go back to that and try it again?
I play Destiny 2. I fall asleep in the middle of it. It's not interesting, And by the way, I'm going to say something heretical, but I know a lot of people agree with me. Borderlands has the same problem. It wasn't fun. Not, especially if you're not playing single player. I mean, anything is fun when you're playing co-op. Aliens Colonial Marines is fun when you're playing co-op. It's just that...
Borderlands 2 is fun.
Here's the thing. And, there are a lot of people who are fans of multiplayer. I mean, there was a shit ton of people who really loved Kane and Lynch multiplayer, that multiplayer mode with the bank heist, with the betrayal mechanic. It was innovative, but it was attached to a shitty game, so it's like no one played it, but it was fantastic gameplay. The problem is that if you're going to have an MMO, you have to have a reason to be there. You have to have a reason that you say, okay, this is what I'm fighting for, and Destiny has none of that. Yeah, who cares about a big, gigantic orb and you're fighting rejects from Halo? That's basically what they are.
It's always been about building towards those raids. So the raids are the giant spectacle.
What are those raids going towards,
I just told you, they're going towards the good loot.
Yeah, but what are you using the good loot for?
And then you use it to go back and do more.
World of Warcraft, like I said before, as I said already, it was to fuck up the other faction.
You get that good loot, and then you go back to the raid and do it easier than you did before. I'm telling you from
the horse's
mouth. Here's
the difference. World of Warcraft has the same loot which you raid to get the good loot so that you can do better raids. But there was always that fat thing in which you were Alliance or you were Horde, and you were going to fuck up the other guy. That was especially true in Dark Age of Camelot. That's
true.
But people go into Realm versus Realm and say, yeah, I'm going to kick your ass. Here come my shrooms.
Sure, and I keep telling you, they've tried the faction thing before, but they've never gone full throttle on it.
It is – here's the thing. You just can't slap it on. It has to be ingrained. Let me give you an example. Halo 5 Guardians, they tried to include the co-op mode. They tried to do the Horde mode that was in they tried to do Firefight in Halo 5, but since it wasn't incorporated in the beginning – it was off and people didn't like it. You have to build the game from the ground up. This is you. That's them. You hate them. You want to kill their shit. That's not ingrained from day one on this. In day one in Destiny 2, it's, well, here are the bad guys. They're AI. Go ahead and kill their people.
Well, sure, but then it sounds like you're describing something that's not going to happen anyway, and it sounds like Bungie recognizes that there's no point.
If Destiny 3 starts out with, okay, here's the good humans, here's the bad, and there's the other faction, and you both are against each other. And the thing about World of Warcraft, by the way, is that the Horde and Alliance may be at war, but they're not really against each other. They're more like in a permanent state of squabbling,
I just think that Destiny is a different kind of game, and the reason that they haven't done that is that... It's not necessarily.
Planetside 2... was played for a long time, you know. And I didn't really like PlanetSide 2, but the first PlanetSide, you know, as flawed as it was really fun because you were this one faction. The other two factions are out there.
Yeah, but sure, but nobody has ever talked about PlanetSide as the big success MMO of the 2000s.
Well, here's the problem with PlanetSide. It tried to do more than it was technically capable of.
So even it wasn't capable of doing
it wasn't capable. It tried its best, and it was really, really popular, and the multiplayer was fun. Let me give you another example. You can look at Star Siege Tribes. I mean, that was kept alive by the fans for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And hey, you know what? Fuck Bungie. How about getting the Star Siege Tribes fans, developers to do Destiny? Like I said, the main problem is there's no emergent gameplay in Destiny 2. There's no emergent. It's completely controlled. And while that may work for a multiplayer game like Halo, okay, you're on this side, capture the flag. In Destiny, you're trying to do a persistent world, and it's just not going to work unless you have motivation.
I disagree. It's worked before.
It's not working now. Activision is already saying it's not performing. And it's not because people are meanie heads. It's because it's not built right. And I'm telling you why it's not built right.
I don't think it's not built right. I really don't. It's not performing at all.
Zinsky in Lawbringers, in which he's pissing everybody off by shitting on them.
But it's also just saying that it's underperforming, which who knows what the expectations Activision had for it. It's a multi-million dollar.
Who is the developer of Destiny?
Bungie is, right. But Activision is
they
the
could
publisher.
Do no wrong when they were doing Halo. They were gods, and now people are looking down at them. That's how far they've fallen. It's like, oh god, not Bungie again.
I don't know about that. I haven't heard that.
Yeah, you talked about Bungie while they were still with Microsoft, while they're still doing Halo games. They were the shining light, and they left perfectly with Halo Reach, right? They know how to do a multiplayer. They don't know how to do an MMO. You know what they could do? They could turn it into Halo, in which you have a single player campaign, and that's the basis for some multiplayer matches, which Halo does. You know, then they'll excel. But if you're trying to do an MMO, not going to happen because they're not giving the motivation.
Again, I think you're reading underperforming is not performing at all, and I don't think that's the case. Like, I still see plenty of people talking about this game on a regular basis.
But then, after a year, it's going to be completely forgotten about.
I don't know about that.
It happened to better games. And God forbid, when the Red Dead Redemption 2 multiplayer comes out, I think you're going to see a big migration away from Destiny 2. Big migration.
I think you're going to see Grand Theft Auto 5 fans move over, but I don't know about Destiny 2 fans.
Destiny is a particular kind of... And I think they're waiting and seeing, because here's the thing, you know, there's a lot of people who just don't like Grand Theft Auto. You know? Well, Red Dead Redemption is appealing to people. I mean, I despise Grand Theft Auto by now. You know, it's just like, I didn't even get Grand Theft Auto 5 because I knew it was going to be about, and I just got tired of it. You know, there's something about the gameplay in Red Dead Redemption 2 and the first Red Dead Redemption that just hits the mark perfectly. And it has nothing to do with it's horses instead of cars.
I don't, aside from the obvious modern and Western themes, I'm not sure what the difference is because in
Deadeye
Red Dead Redemption 2, you're leading a gang and you can rob people and shoot.
Okay, here's the thing.
What's the difference between what? Hold on.
Between Red Dead Redemption and Grand Theft Auto. Well, here's the thing. The main character in Red Dead Redemption, both games, is trying to be a good person, and they actually succeed if you want them to.
Well, two of the three main characters of Grand Theft Auto 5 were trying to be a good and better
person. No, they're just shitheads who think they're doing good, and then they just fall back.
Two of them.
Oh, fuck it. It's like hopeless. And the other thing is that I have to stress this enough. The shooting in Red Dead Redemption is far better than the shooting in Grand Theft Auto. And Deadeye makes you feel like an absolute badass.
Yeah. I can't argue with the Deadeye. but I didn't really have that hard of a time with shooting in that game. But I remember
when you Michael... do. There's one part in Red Dead Redemption 2 in which there are four guys holding guns on you, and one of them has a gun to I don't know if it, I forgot if it's a friend or an ally or just someone you're supposed to save. You go into Deadeye and you shoot all four of them in the head. And it's like bang, 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 and they all fall down. And the guy who they're hooked, he says, "Jesus!" It makes you feel great because you're that good. And also, you know, the exploration and the hunting and the fishing. You know, you don't have that in Grand Theft Auto. You have other activities, but ironically, fishing is a lot more exciting in Red Dead Redemption than it is than going with your cousin to do something is. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Red Dead Redemption also has a lot more exploration, also, in both games. I don't think there's that much exploration in Grand Theft Auto V. All that it does is unlock burrows. You know? And also, you can't skin humans. And you know, you can't skin animals in Red Dead. Oh, by the way, you weren't here, but we have to say this. Warning sign, in Red Dead Redemption 2, the skinning is a lot more graphic.
Yeah. But I think when it comes to Red Dead Redemption 2's online, you can't really compare Destiny 2.
Well,
I think it's apples.
Anything
I think
because it's not out yet. We don't even know what it's going to be like. They keep on talking about having maybe a battle royale mode.
I can take a guess based off of Red Dead Redemption 1, and even then I can say it's apples and oranges.
Here's the thing. If Destiny 2 comes out with a battle royale mode, that's basically it waving the white flag and saying we give up. We don't know what you want. This is what everybody seems to want. Here's Battle Royale in Destiny. Enjoy.
Yeah, I would. I don't know that that's going to happen, but you're probably right on that particular regard.
Anyways, you know, that's the question of the week. Why do you think Destiny 2 sucks?
Jonas.
Man.
The question of the week is...
Let me go out and say right now, I don't like Destiny. It's not my kind of game. It's never been my kind of game. When I speak from the perspective of the colleagues I have that are
rabid about the game. Love it too, but the problem is they're in the minority.
I just don't know that they are. Again, underperforming doesn't mean not performing at all. Underperforming for a AAA title can mean, like, not making billions of dollars hand over feet.
But still making millions.
No, but here's the thing. It's enough for the fans to be panicking.
Yeah, because when the publisher makes a public statement saying this isn't doing as good as we wanted it to.
But the fans thing, are gonna, it's not only that, but they also know that the population is down. When you're playing a game like that, you know the population is down. You see the servers and you know it's down. And you see people leaving, and you have friends who are leaving, and you know, and your clan starts getting smaller and smaller, and eventually they're going to say we're going to start merging servers.
Sure, but like when a publisher says it, it makes everybody go, "Oh God, the game is going away."
Well, people are panicking over PUBG right now, and it has nothing. There's no public. They don't have a publisher, and no one's. You know, it's not like they've made any announcements, but that population is falling too. Although in that case, I just think it's simple, entropy. You know, it's 50 versus 50 on a shrinking board. You know, that's you have to have more than that. Whatever you want to say about Fortnite, it still has more to offer than just Battle Royale.
I mean, bless their hearts, they're trying. They're moving it over to PS4 pretty soon.
Well, it was a year exclusivity contract, and Microsoft basically said, you know, if you want it, Game Pass, it's free.
Sure. They're finally getting it over to PS4 pretty soon as well.
Yeah, on December 7th, if I remember correctly.
Yes, and I don't know if it's going to matter, but...
Well, here's the thing. It's gonna bring in a new flush amount of players. I mean, those who haven't already played on a PC and Xbox One will probably check it out. I mean, it's $30. It's not that expensive. And they'll want to see what is this all about. And also, they already have keyboard and mouse... I don't know if it's going to be active for PUBG, but I know that PlayStation consoles have always had the mouse and keyboard set up. So we'll see about that, because one of the biggest barriers for PUBG is that it is a friggin' hot pad. It's a macro-intensive game. And also, really, you know, the game just basically devolves into two people sniping each other from across a map as the map shrinks.
Yeah. And, like, at this point, like, I still don't understand why PUBG isn't free to play compared to Fortnite.
It will be. It's already going to be free to play from Microsoft on their Game Pass. This time next year, it's going to be completely free to play. The thing that I'm thinking about is, are they going to include a new game mode aside from Battle Royale type thing? Because there's just so long you can ride that, you know, until people get bored.
I think the only Battle Royale mode for any game that I've been legitimately interested in the past couple years, outside of like some passing interest in a couple games, is the one they announced for what was it called? The zombie game.
Oh.
Dying Light 2. They announced a possible battle royale for that, and that sounded legitimately interesting, because
I just won Left 4 Dead 3, damn it.
Because the idea of Dying Light's mechanics of melee combat mixed
and
up
parkour.
with parkour. Melee combat, parkour, scavenging, mixed up with the idea of having and maybe even keeping those like monsters on the map, having those as another threat.
Yeah, I just you don't even need the Battle Royale for that kind of thing, or for Red Dead Redemption 2, because you're wandering around, you're fighting other people. Oh, here comes a cougar.
I think that is legitimately more interesting to me as like what could go right, what could go wrong, what could happen in general, compared to all of the other like Fortnite, PUBGs, and all that stuff where you're just fighting humans all the time. Let me hack a man to death with an axe, or let me hack a man with an axe and then kick him off a roof into a pile of zombies.
Who, me?
No, Dying Light 2. That's what
I mean, me. You want to take me to the roof, hack me to pieces, and kick him? Well, here's the thing. How about this? You know, with the Dying Light 2, not only do you have Battle Royale, but how about the day-night cycle? Just a little bit accelerated.
Yeah, that would be cool as well, because then you got the more dangerous zombies and creatures that come out at night. That could be like hardcore mode. That could literally be their hardcore mode, is play this game during the night, see if you can survive.
But anyways, question of the week. What do you think Destiny 2 really needs? I'll just leave it at that.
How kind of you.
Well, no, I mean, it has to be broad. It can't be, you know, it can't be something specific. It's just like, you know, there's a problem with Destiny 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no matter what you say, there's a problem. What the problem is and how you solve it, you know, is different things to different people.
Sure.
Some people may say, well, there's no real problem with Destiny 2. Maybe it's just, you know, there's a lot of big games that are coming out and it's sort of getting overshadowed. I mean, that is a legitimate thing.
It has been a strong year for games.
It has, I agree.
Absurdly strong. Like, I'm drowning in games that I want to play.
And hell, you know, Fallout 76 tonight. For those of you know, we're recording on November 13th.
I hate the idea of February 2019 because there's going to be so many more and I'm not ready for them.
Oh, screw that. No. What about 2020 when the new consoles are out?
I want Tunic. I want to play Tunic. I've been looking forward to that one next.
Yeah, you know, I forget Super Lucky's Tale.
I just got to put the blinders on and focus on Resident Evil 2 Remake. That's all I need to do.
You know, we're all forgetting about the other Battle Royale mode that may be a surprise hit that's based on Cyanide and Punishment.
Oh, that one, yeah. I remember that.
Yes, I do remember that. I've heard decent things about it sometimes, but it seems like a flash in the pan.
Well, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. It's a Battle Royale game, but at least it's top-down, which is a new twist on it. And you know, there are a lot of people who don't like shooters. You know, they'd rather have a top-down game. It's easier for them to strategize that way.
There are people that get motion sickness and they handle top-down much better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not only that, but it's sort of like, you know, on some games I can't strategize at a certain perspective, right?
Right.
For some people, top-down, you know, it's more like a chessboard for them. And while it's an action chessboard, you know, it's sort of like, you know, they're able to see everything and be able to react to everything.
On the flip side, my issue with top-down games in this sort of setting is that it, like, denies pretty much all verticality. and makes certain tactics just like impossible.
What? This is not Star Trek 2. We don't need three-dimensional thinking.
I do need three-dimensional thinking.
not in this game. Not Rapture Rejects. Nope. I will say, you know, Rapture Rejects is one of the best trailers for a game I've seen in a long while.
I will say one of the funniest things I've seen in Fortnite is people trying not to get shot, and so they'll just build as high as they can and then build a sky bridge over people's heads and just try to stay up high in the air. And that's
those games usually devolve into? Two people are left on the map and they just keep on building a wall higher and higher and higher and higher, and whoever blinks first gets shot.
Well, it depends on who has better weaponry. If you can blow up the other person's walls and get to them and just murder them in their little cubby hole, then you win.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
I am at Alpha Shard.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.